And let's begin this morning again by welcoming those who are visiting in our audience. We want you to know we're happy that you're here. We ask you to open your Bible and your mind as we study some things together. If you have any questions concerning what you're about to hear, be more than happy to sit down with an open Bible, an open mind to have a better understanding of God's will. And if you need any clarification, please do not hesitate to call or ask upon us. One of our visitors this morning, I'm glad to have my Uncle Kenny. He's from Arkansas, he's here, and it's good to have him with us. Think a lot of him, and I'm glad he stopped by. And anything he tells you, just take with a grain of salt. He kind of exaggerates things from time to time. But he's a good uncle. Love him dearly, and I'm glad that he's here. Also, I want to point out that, Lord willing, on Friday, Rita and I will be leaving for Kansas City. I am going to be conducting a gospel meeting in Kansas City next Lord's Day, Lord willing. And I'll be gone for a week and would ask that you remember me and Rita in your prayers. And also, I'm thankful that men have stepped up in my place in my absence. Brother Jimmy Sims will be speaking next Lord's Day morning and evening. And the following Sunday, Brother Chase Byers, you don't know Brother Byers, he works with the preacher over in Lawrenceburg, Brother Harden. He's a young man from originally from Louisville, and he is going to be working with Brother Harden, and he's going to occupy the pulpit on the 25th of September. So please come and support him. I know that he'll do a good job, and I know that you'll be uplifted. And Brother Mel is going to take care of my classes on Sunday, and Brother Buddy Steele is going to take care of my class on the Wednesday that I'm going to be gone. So we'd ask for your prayers and remember us in those things that everything goes well. You know, today I'm going to talk to you about a very important subject to all of us. And it has to do with one of the greatest blessings that God has given us physically while we live upon this earth. And I almost forgot that today is a day that I know us as people in this country, we will always remember 15 years ago today that we had a great tragedy happen in our country. And 15 years later, although life has gone on, for 3,000 of our citizens, their life ended on September 11, 2001. And those families who lost loved ones, it still goes on for them. And we need to remember them in our prayers and be thankful, as Brother Mel prayed just a moment ago, that we do have many blessings and freedoms in this country. And they did not come to us by accident. They came because there are men and women who are willing to sacrifice even to the point of their life in order that we might be able to enjoy the freedoms that we have. And we need to be thankful for that, and we need to remember those families who are grieving over loss of life, even this 15 years ago today. But that leads us to really into my lesson. One of the greatest physical blessings that God has given us while we live in this life is our physical relationships. They give a lot of meaning, happiness, and peace and joy into our lives. But those relationships must be preserved. And if they are not preserved, then they can be destroyed. And that destruction has far-reaching consequences. And so I want to talk to you today about preserving our most important physical relationships. And I want you to know that as active and as busy and as concerned that we need to be in the physical relationships that we're blessed with, there's someone else that's concerned about it too. And he's ever busy to try to destroy them. The devil is busy. And the devil is busy in a lot of areas. But one of the areas that he spends a great deal of time in is destroying our relationships with the Lord and with one another. You see, Satan doesn't want peace. He doesn't want harmony. He doesn't want happiness. He doesn't want you to have joy in your life. That is contrary to everything that Satan stands for. It is also contrary to what he is striving to do. And what he is trying to do is destroy us. Destroy us physically, destroy us spiritually. And in means to do that, he will use our physical relationships in order to destroy us spiritually. And he will seek to destroy the peace and the harmony and the joy and the blessings that we receive from those relationships, and how we can work within those relationships to further the cause of Christ, to strengthen this country, to strengthen our relationship with God. And he's going to do everything he can to busy himself to destroy those relationships, because they are an ends to a means to destroy us spiritually. Make no mistake about this. Satan does not want you to be happy and contented. That is not in accordance with his plans. And so, how's he going to do that? Well, he's going to do that in a number of ways. He's going to use sin, as we've talked about in previous lessons, in order to bring about that destruction. And he's going to do that by selfishness. He's going to try to make us selfish in these relationships. He's going to try to allow pride to creep in that causes destruction of those relationships. He's going to try to minimize it. He's going to try to overshadow the love that needs to exist in those relationships in order to destroy them. He's going to use gossip and slander in order to try to destroy and minimize and marginalize those relationships. He's going to use busyness. He's going to get us so busy in life that we can't focus on the things that are really important to us, the things that we need to give time and attention to. And he's just going to busy us in life so that we can allow these things to crumble and deteriorate. He's also going to use laziness, that we're just lazy. We're not going to extend the effort and the need that we're going to have to exert in order to preserve these relationships. Let me tell you something, brethren. Relationships that exist between husband and wife, relationships that exist between parents and children, and relationships that deal between brethren, they have to be nurtured. They have to be looked after. They have to have some time spent in them. And if you don't spend time in them, and you don't spend time in working on them, then they are going to deteriorate. And when they deteriorate, it leads to a domino effect. It leads to other problems, not just for that relationship, but even for the country itself, and even for the Lord's church. And so we need to understand that all these things are used as a vehicle, as a means to an end. And so we want to talk today about how we can preserve the most important physical relationships that we have. Now, to destroy these relationships, the devil's going to use a variety of things. He's going to use worldliness. You know, in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 through 17, the Bible instructs us that we're not to love the world, neither the things that are in the world. And the reason that we're not is because the world is passing away in all of its lust. And we'll look more about this in detail in just a moment. He's also going to use materialism. We are the most blessed nation upon this earth. But in actuality, we are the poorest in spirit. Even though we have been blessed momentarily, and we have been blessed with great material wealth and prosperity, that is not something that has helped us. It is rather something that has hurt us on many different levels. And Satan is very good at using materialism in order to destroy relationships. Number three, secularism. Secularism is destroying physical relationships. And we'll get into that in just a moment. We'll also talk about psychology. Everybody, about how we think about one another, about how we use psychology, and how we try to use it in a way that's counterproductive. And then about individualism. You know, no physical relationship, whether you're talking about marriage, whether you're talking about parents and children, whether you're talking about between brethren, no relationship is going to thrive and going to be fruitful and going to grow if there's too much individualism in it. If it's too much wrapped around me, if it's too much about me, if it's too much about what I want, what I need, and what I desire. And any relationship like that in time will deteriorate. And they're going to use that in order to destroy it. And last, entertainment. Entertainment is also used as a vehicle of Satan to destroy relationships in order that they may weaken, in order that they might be less than God would have them to be, and in a way that our allegiance can be divided, in order that we might weaken the things that God gave us as blessings. Where do we begin? I want to begin with the basic, very basic relationship called friends. Friends are a very, very important relationship. Friends are something that bring purpose and meaning into our life. And every one of you in this audience this morning have friends. And those friends are on different levels of friendship. Not all friends are on the same level. What do I mean by that? Well, we have casual friends. We have friends that we see from time to time, maybe because of the jobs that we have, or maybe because of the circles that we run in. We have men and women who are friends on a casual or maybe on a social basis. And then we have friends who are very close friends, very dear and very important to us, so that we have grown close to over the years. And we, our children are close, and we're close, and our families are close. And those are men and women that we have a lot of intertwined relationship with, and we have a deep abiding affection for them. And then we also have intimate friends, friends that are almost like family, people that we lean on, people that we turn to in time of need and in time of distress and in time of discomfort. There are people that we have much confidence in. I can tell you personally, there are people who are not my physical family that if I had a need or if I was really struggling, I know I would pick up the phone and I would tell them I need them. I know they would be here. They would be here as quick as they could get here. And they do because of the relationship that we have. And those kind of people are important in our life. But those things are important because we made them important. Because of the time that we invested in those relationships. And so, what about our friends? Well, in Proverbs 18, verse 24, the Bible says, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." You know, I have casual friends. When I worked in the military, there were people that I was casually, because they worked for me. And we'd go out to lunch together. We'd have times when we were all together in a environment where we would get together after work. And we had casual acquaintance, but they weren't real deep friends. But I always tried to prove myself friendly, that people could come up to me, that I was someone that they could talk to. Because let me tell you, as a supervisor, you had to have people who had some confidence in you, or you wouldn't be able to take care of the problems that arise in a working environment. You had to have people that felt comfortable in coming to you, that you could help them, and you were generally concerned about them. And I tried to exemplify that all the time. I was in the military, and by what I was able to accomplish, I think I did that pretty well, because people liked working for me, because I tried to be fair, I tried to be equitable, and I tried to be there when they were needed. But I also had close friends that I grew to love and appreciate because of who they were and what they did for my life. And then, of course, we have intimate friends. And in 1 Samuel chapter 20, David and Jonathan had that kind of intimate relationship. Now, Jonathan again caused David to vow because he loved him, for he loved him as he did his own soul. Jonathan and David had a very close personal relationship. Jonathan even stood with David against his own father. When his father went against God, he went with David. He tried to keep David alive when his father was seeking to kill him. That was because of the love that he had for David. They were of kindred spirits. And so this relationship grew because of the love and respect that Jonathan had for David, and because of David's love for the Lord, and because of his commitment to God. It made him very appealing to Jonathan. because of the love that he demonstrated for his God. You know what? That needs to be an appeal that people look to in us. Our friends, casual, close, or intimate, they should be able to see the close, deep, abiding relationship that we have with God. It should be something that makes us attractive to other people because we are close and we are very much committed and dedicated to God. Key elements. Love. In any level of friendship, a friend loves at all times and is a brother born of adversity. In any level of friends, whether we're talking about casual or intimate or close, there is a key element of love. And that key element of love is a deep abiding affection that we have for that person because of what they have done or what they bring into our lives. There also must be consistency. I like friends who I can count on. They're always there. I know I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to worry about them being fair weather. I don't have to worry about them not backing up the things that they tell me. I can count on them when they tell me something. I know that they'll be there. And I know they'll tell me the truth. You know, there's people that I have who I love because they tell me the truth. I don't always like what they say. Sometimes it's pretty hard to swallow. But you know, I need people like that. Because they don't tell me what I want to hear. They tell me what I need to hear. And you know something, brethren? You need friends like that. You need friends that will, you know what? If you go off on a tangent, or you go off into something that could harm you spiritually, could hurt you, could lead you to alienate you from God, you need people that love you enough, that have enough commitment and dedication in your life, that they would warn you that you're going in the wrong direction. You know what? That's what God expects each of us to be to one another. He expects us to be the kind of friend that when we are going in the wrong direction, we, with love, concern, and with empathy, try to point that person back to where they need to be. You don't put your head in the sand when somebody's having trouble if they're your friend. You don't do that. Friends don't do that. You know, it amazes me how advertising works. The liquor industry. You know, there's so much danger in drinking and driving. And so the liquor industry, they're going to be thoughtful. So now in their commercials, they talk about designated drivers. They talk about don't drink and drive. They talk about, Coors Beer has a commercial where it talks about underage drinking. He goes, just wait. Just wait till you're of age. We can wait. We don't need, you know, it's like they're concerned. They're not concerned. They don't care one thing. They just want you to buy their product. They're not concerned about you not getting killed on the road. They're not concerned about you not getting addicted to alcohol. They're not concerned about it at all. All of that is just a smokescreen. That's not somebody that's really being your friend, because if they were really your friend, they would tell you all the harm and destruction that stuff can bring you to life, but they're not going to do that. If they do that, they don't put any money in their pocket. You see, that's a real flimsy type of friendship. And so we need to have love and consistency. We need also in these relationships, we need loyalty. The talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is a faithful spirit conceals the matter. You know, I've learned in my occupation as a gospel preacher that people come to me with a lot of personal issues in their life. Things that they need to talk about. Things that they are struggling with. Things that they are having difficulty in their life with. And you know, they need to be able to trust me that I'm not going to tell everybody. That I'm not going to go out and share this information with other people. You know how good my credibility would do that if I couldn't do that? If I told everything I know, nobody would come and talk to me. Nobody would come in and talk to me. Nobody would have anything to do. There has to be a degree of loyalty between friends. You know, there's people that I talk to on a different level than I do other people. There are people that I have as much confidence in that I could tell them anything, and I know that it wouldn't go any further than them. Because I know that the loyalty that they have to me. You know, as a gospel preacher, you know, people come to you with their problem. That's fine. I'm more than happy to do that. And I've done that here. I've done that everywhere I've been. I'm not averse to that. But who do I talk to? Who do I talk to when I have problems? Well, you don't have any problems. Well, yes, I do. Who do I talk to? But you know what? I've got to be very careful about who I talk to. Don't I? What would happen if I talk to someone and they just begin to spread around that your preacher's got this problem and that problem? You see, I've got to be very careful because it could start to affect my job. It could start affecting my relationship with you. And you know, for a lot of men, I can speak forward from this occupation. That's why they're not close with their brethren. Because they're afraid of that. Well, I don't think you can be effective if you're afraid of that. I don't believe that's going to demonstrate any loyalty. But you know what? I also understand that this is a two-way street. You ought to be able to have that kind of loyalty to know. You know, I told you a couple weeks ago, my aim is to let you know that I'm always here if you need me. And I hope in the 6 years that Rita and I have been here that you know that's true. That if you need us, if we can help you, we will. And I hope we've demonstrated that by how we've conducted ourselves. But you know what? We need that too. We need that too. Because we're human just like you. And this job has its own set of difficulties. Being a preacher's wife. And you know, there's times that we need when we're struggling and we're looking for answers. And so we need to have this type of relationship. But we also need to have honesty. I don't want you to lie to me. And I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you the truth, even if I know you might not like it. Proverbs 28:23, it says, he who rebukes a man will find more favor afterwards than he who flatters with his tongue. I don't want somebody to be a yes man in my life. You can always find yes men. I want somebody who's going to be honest, to be straight. I don't have a problem with that. Now, that doesn't mean I like everything they say, because I don't. But you know, I'll give you an illustration. And I'm not doing it because my uncle's here, but he knows my dad. I love my dad. You know, but me and my dad, we look at things from a very different perspective. And often my dad would come to me about something, and I'd tell him about what he was asking about or what he was going to do or what he was thinking about doing or what he had done. He'd get angry. He'd really get angry at me. And one day I was sitting in there after we had one of these conversations. I'm just sitting there shaking my head and I say to his wife, I said, why does he ask me? Why he gets angry? Why does he not ask me? Because he gets angry. She looked at me and she said, Keith, he asked you because he knows you'll tell him the truth. So you know what? That still didn't make me feel very good. But I know that's why he does ask me. And you know what? Over the years, I asked him some things. And I didn't like what he said. But they turned out to be the truth. And you know why he did that? Because he loves me. And you know, you need people like that in your life. You need people that's going to look out for your best interest. Sometimes we're blinded and we can't see it. But somebody else that doesn't have their dog in the fight, they can see a lot clearer than we can. But you know what? If that person loves me, and that person is loyal to me, and that person has consistently demonstrated that he has an interest in me, I'm going to take a great deal of thought in what he tells me. Because that will help me be a better person. I'm telling you, people that have this kind of character are the kind of people you want to surround yourself with. Because they will make you a better person. You know what all of us should strive to be? This kind of friend. Because when we're this kind of friend, we can help people be better than they are. That's what God expects us to do. Those are the kind of friends that are worth keeping. Wisdom. Do not deceive. Evil company corrupts good habits. We need to use wisdom in the friends that we choose. When I was growing up, my mom and dad wanted to know who we were with. And not only did they want to know who they were with, they wanted to know about their family. They wanted to know about their mother and their father. Was that because my mom and dad didn't trust me? No, that's because my mom and dad were concerned about my well-being. I didn't think they were being nosy. And you know what? I had a good friend who I knew his parents better than he did, I think. But they didn't care where he was as long as he wasn't at home. And he spent a great deal of time at my house. And you know what? That destroyed his relationship with his parents because they didn't have time for him. You know, we need to use wisdom. You know what? You can train a child. You can teach a child. And you know, you all know that proverb. Train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. But you let that child choose a friend, a close friend, an intimate friend, who's in the world, that has no relationship with God. And you let them influence that child that you've trained to live for God, and he'll destroy every good thing that you taught him. You don't think it can happen? You know, it's not wrong for a Christian to marry a non-Christian. But there's a lot of danger because that person has an influence on the other person. How can you live as a husband and wife and not have an influence on the other person? I have always, in my life, I have always had a lot of respect and deep respect for men and women who are married in marriages where the other mate is not a believer. That is a difficult relationship, I know. And here's why. It's not because I question their faith, because some of the strongest Christians I know are men and women who are in relationship with their mates, not a Christian. But here's what I know deep within me. A Christian and a non-Christian are heading in two different spiritual directions. If I love that person, what does that do to my concern for them? I love that person. And I know that if he doesn't or she doesn't change her life, that they're going to be lost. Does that hurt me? Yeah, it hurts me. But I have told every person in those relationships, don't ever quit serving God. Your greatest tool to lead that person to Christ is your determined commitment to live for God. Because let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, if it's not important to you, it will never be important to them. You know, that's what 1 Peter 3:1 means. If you can't win them with the word, win them by the conversation of your life. That's how you'll lead them to Christ. Because they'll see your commitment. I can tell you in 32 years almost of preaching, I have seen many mates run over by their faithful mate. But I have never, ever seen it happen by a mate that wasn't fully dedicated and committed to God. I have never personally witnessed it. But I have seen a wife or a husband who was totally committed to God and stuck with it and followed through with it, and in time they won their mate over. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're in those relationships, don't ever give up. Just keep doing the right thing. If you can win them over, you will. But always remember, you have no control over free will. You just need to strive to be committed. We need to have wisdom in the friends that we choose. You know, you need to pick friends that are going to make you better than what you are. That's the kind of friends you need. My dearest friends on this earth are Christians. Every one of them. To a person. Is that by accident? No, that's not. Now, I have friends who are not Christians that I'm close to. But my closest friends, the ones that I deeply appreciate and I count on, all of them are Christians. Because I know that we have that in common. And whatever perception and whatever question they're going to answer, whatever direction they're going to take me in, they're always going to consider the spiritual application of it. That's what I want. Because I want to go to heaven. That's what I want. Because I want to be stronger in the Lord. I want to go to heaven. And that's the kind of friend I want to be. You know, when I counsel people before they get married, one of the things I tell them is you need to marry someone that will help you get to heaven. And you can help them. Because that's what God intends for us to do. And so we need to have these key elements of love, of consistency, of loyalty, of honesty, and wisdom. And when you look for those characters, you know what? You're going to pick good friends. When you look for those character traits, you're going to put people, men and women around you that will help you, that will strengthen you, that will make you better than you are. The devil wants you to have friends that will use you, that will lure you into sin, and will discourage you. That's the kind of friends the devil wants you to pick, because then he can win you away from Christ. Then he can weaken your resolve. Then he can get you back in his camp. And you know what? The devil's going to let you do it. Because you know what? You choose your friends. The devil doesn't choose them. Your parents don't choose them. We choose them. So we're the ones that put those people in our lives. We're the ones that put those relationships in our lives. Let me ask you a question. What kind of friends do you have? Are they friends that make you better? Are they friends that make you stronger? Do they make you live closer to God? Do they encourage you to do things that are spiritually? Let me use one other illustration. And I've used this in the past, but it fits here. When I was growing up, the dearest friend that I had on this earth, and still is one of my dearest friends, is my cousin. And we grew up together. We got in more trouble than I can even imagine, that I can tell you. And whenever something was done in our family, the two people they were coming to talk to first, before they knew anything, would be Keith and Kenny. We were that close. And we were always that close. But as we got older, we took kind of two different routes. And he went in a more worldly route. And he's not a Christian to this day. And he got to like alcohol. And the only two people that can really talk to him about that is myself and my uncle back there. And we talk to him about it all the time. But you know, he had a great influence in my life. And there was a lot of things I do just because Kenny was with me. But when I was about 18 or 19 years old, I had just gone into service, and I came home on leave. And I finally decided to get serious about my Christianity. I decided if I'm going to be a Christian, I'm going to be one. And I'm going to live what I'm supposed to do. And we were sitting in the car one night. And I said, Kenny, I love you, and you know there ain't a thing I wouldn't do for you. But if you want to remain my friend, and you want us to have this relationship, you're going to have to quit trying to get me to drink. Because I'm not going to do that. But you have such an influence over me that if you don't stop, I'm going to have to break this off. He never asked me again. Ever. You know why he did that? Because he loves me. But I was smart enough to know that if I didn't put the brakes on this, I was going to go in a direction that would hurt me. Now, was I taking a risk? You know I was. But you know what? You're not taking a risk if people really down deep love you. If they really love you, there's no risk involved. Because they want that relationship to be maintained. Be careful what kind of friends that you choose. I'm just going to start this other one, but we'll get more into it tonight. My brethren, there's not a relationship in this world that I need, that I count on more than this relationship. Brethren. And in the Bible, it uses terms so we can understand the closeness of this relationship. But he answered them and said, my mother and my brothers are those who hear the word of God and do it. This is when Jesus was told, your mother and brethren want to see you. And the people were flying, the people were coming in a large throng to come and see Jesus. And they said, hey, your mom and your brothers and your mother are out there. They need to see you. And here's how Jesus answered that. He said, my brethren are those who hear my word and do it. We are part of the family of God. And in the Bible, it uses terms like community. In Ephesians chapter 2, in verse number 12, it uses the term community. That we are a community of believers. It also uses the word one body. There are many members, but there is one body. In Ephesians 2:16. It uses fellow citizens. In Ephesians chapter 2, it says we are fellow citizens. We are joint heirs. And it says we are members of the household of God. We belong in the family of God. And the Bible also says in Ephesians 2:21 that we are the temple of God. We are the temple of the living God. We are the dwelling place of God. And in these relationships, we are brethren. We are a family. Now, you know what? I have a physical family. And I love them. I love them a great deal. My brothers, my aunts, my uncles, my grandparents, I miss them dearly. They're a very big part of my life. I miss them dearly. But I have a different relationship when it comes to my brethren. A brethren that God gave me to sustain me, to help me, to guide me, to strengthen me, and to watch out for me. God gave us each other. And he gave us each other because he knew we needed each other. Ladies and gentlemen, who is going to try to encourage you to live more for God than your brethren? But I'll tell you the truth. And I'll be painfully honest about this. Some of the greatest joy that I have ever experienced has been at the hands of my brethren. Some of the greatest heartache that I have ever experienced and ever gone through has been at the hands of my brethren. It is not just a give me because we're brethren that we don't have to work at the relationship. You know why? Because we're not all the same. We weren't raised the same. We don't have the same values that we were raised with. We didn't come from the same environments. We're different. We're as different as we look. But all of that has to be meshed into a relationship where we love one another, where we are concerned about one another, and where we have love one for another. Does that just happen? Does that just happen because we wear the same name spiritually? No, it doesn't just happen. You've got to nurture it. You've got to work at it. You've got to put some time and you've got to put some of yourself in it to make it work and to make it be something you can count on. In Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 1, it says, I therefore, the prisoner, Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling wherewith you were called. We were all called into Christ in this relationship by the gospel. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 14. That's how we all brought and got in this relationship, because we answered the gospel call. The Bible also says, not only is a calling, but we have to have humility. With lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love. And ladies and gentlemen, you can't do this without humility. You know, the best kind of brethren are brethren who know it's not all about you. It's not all about me. It's not all about getting what I want. And it can't be all about getting what you want. We got to want to get what's best for both of us. What will help both of us. That will strengthen both of us. That we're willing to look beyond our needs in order to help somebody in time of their need. You can't do that, brethren, without humility. You've got to lose yourself. You know, one of the compatibilities that is true in all of these relationships is that selfishness destroys it. Whether you're talking about friends, whether you're talking about brethren, whether you're talking about marriage, children. Selfishness destroys it. Pride destroys it. It can't be about me. It can't be about you. You've got to have humility. Gentleness. What does that mean? You know what that is a synonym of? Kindness. You gotta be kind. What does it mean to be kind? It means to be thoughtful. It means to put yourself in the other person's place. You know, I've learned in my life as a preacher that there's times I don't need to say a thing. I just need to be there. I don't need to offer any explanation. I don't need to say any words. I just need to be there. You know, I remember Connie Adams, a number of years ago, talking about the death of his first wife, Bobby. He says, there were hundreds of people there. They came up to me. They hugged me. They talked to me. But you know what? I don't remember anything they told me. But I do remember they were there. And I knew they were there because they loved me, because I saw the tears in their eyes. You don't have to say words. You just have to be kind. You have to be long-suffering. We're human. We make mistakes. We put our foot in our mouth, sometimes both. We sometimes don't say things at the appropriate time. There's times when we need to be, you know, I appreciate Brother Shirley's prayer. If you listen to Buddy's prayer, there's a phrase in his prayer I really like. He says, teach us to be quiet when we should be quiet and to speak up when we should speak up. You know, we'd go a long way if we learned how to do that. There's a time when we need to be quiet and we need to listen. You know what? You can't help a brother who's in need if you're doing all the talking yourself. Sometimes a brother doesn't need you to talk. He needs you to listen. Because that's what he needs. He needs you to listen. You know, I've learned. When I remember back in the early 80s, I was really struggling in my faith. And there was an elder, he's passed away now, and I spent many a night in his home and kept him up to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And he had to go to work the next day. And you know, there were nights he never said anything, ever. But he listened to me. And you know what? I got through my problem. He was the best man at my, Rita and I, our wedding. Because I loved him that much. Because when I was really struggling in my faith, he didn't offer me any advice. He didn't tell me what to do. He just listened to me. Was he long-suffering? Yeah, he should have kicked me out of his house. But he didn't. He'll never know. Well, I told him a number of times, I hope he knew I meant it, how much that meant to me. We need to have supportive love. Brethren, this world can be a tough place. There could be things that can happen that can take your breath right out of your body. It can knock you to your knees. And there's times that people need people they can count on to support them. You know what? If you haven't experienced a time like that in your life, you will. And you know what? You're going to find this out. That you're going to find out the people who really care about you. The people who are really there because they want to help. And you know what? You're going to be able to identify them. And you won't have anybody, you won't need anybody's help to tell you. You know, we need to be supportive. You know what? There's things that I've gone through in my life that maybe you haven't gone through, but now you're going through something that I already experienced. I can help you make it easier for you than it was for me. I got to be willing to do that. I got to be supportive. But you can't be supportive if you don't have a love. And you know what? To do all these things, and here's where we'll close this morning. It takes effort. There's a risk involved when you get close to people. You're investing some of yourself. You're revealing some of yourself to another person. There's a risk in that. Because you can be hurt. You can be hurt. But I want to tell you something. The risk is worth it. The effort is worth it because of the dividends that it can pay. Because, brethren, let me tell you something. Sometime in your life, if it has not happened, it will happen. Well, you're going to need people. You're going to need people who really, truly care about your welfare. Care about what you're going through. Care about what is ailing you. And care about your well-being. And you need to be able to count on them. But you know what? God gave us the responsibility that each of us are to be that kind of person. Now, you know what? We're not all going to be close friends because some of us have more in common than others. We're not all going to be real intimate friends. That's not going to happen. But we all ought to be brethren who love each other, who are kind to one another, who are long-suffering to one another, who have a genuine love for one another, that in time of need, in time of sorrow, in time of tragedy, in time of happiness, that I can pick up the phone, that you can pick up the phone, And you could dial my number. Says, Keith, I need you. And to know I'd be there. That's the kind of brother I want to be. But that's the kind of brother and sister you need to be. That if I'm on the other end of that phone, and I need you, that I know you have a genuine, deep, abiding love for me. Now let me ask you something close in this morning. How much money is that worth? How much would you pay to have people like that? And you know what? We have people like that and we didn't pay a thing. The Lord paid it to make it possible that we have this relationship. We didn't have to pay a thing. All we have to do is follow His instruction in being that type of brother. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, you need to be one. And you need to be one because this is the greatest family on earth. Doesn't mean our family doesn't have problems. Doesn't mean that we don't have growing pains. Doesn't mean we're all perfect. But you know what? We're all striving to be. And we're all trying to get to heaven, and we want to help other people get there too. God sent His Son to make it possible that you could have salvation. And by hearing the Word of God, believing that Word, repenting of your sin, acknowledging your sin, confessing His name before men, and submitting to the waters of baptism and contact the blood of Christ, you can enter this relationship. And you will become my brother and my sister in Christ. And then God has called upon me to be the kind of person I've talked about today. To be the kind of person in your life that can help you. Can help you get to heaven. That's what God wants for each of us. If you're here and you are a Christian and you've wandered back into the world and you've lost your way and you've wandered back to what you left, God still loves you. Your brethren still love you, and we're standing ready to assist you in any way that we can, to pray with you and for you, that God would once again bring you back into this relationship, that you could have your sin forgiven, and that you could stand before Him justified. If we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.